Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Scott Ruick, Oregon State women's basketball coach, he hit a milestone, and since he won't take a victory lap, I am dragging him on this radio show to take one. Win number 500, you got it, was that last week? I was over the weekend. Gosh, holidays messed me up. It was after Thanksgiving.
Me too. Yeah, it was right after Thanksgiving down in our, we played in a classic at University of Miami, played Miami on Friday. And then played Liberty on Saturday, and it happened after the Liberty game was 500.
23 years to the day after your first win, you get win number 500. Let's go back to that first win. What do you remember about win number one of your career?
First off, what are the chances of that?
I know.
The AP reporter did that research, and
wow.
I couldn't believe that. Southern California College, we'd already lost our first two games. Lost an overtime game at Azusa Pacific. Of course, I was coaching at George Fox in overtime the night before. And here we're in another overtime game at Vanguard College. Now it's what it's called, in this little tiny gym that they have. And double overtime. I had a post player that actually injured her knee in the first overtime. We found out later it was an ACL injury. She played through the rest of the game with it, though. And we found a way to scrap out this win against, you know, a guy in his first year who's become a legend at Vanguard, in Russ Davis. So my first win, I always joke with him, hey, I'm 1-0 against you, Russ. Just a great guy in our game. And so it was more of a relief than anything, but it was a special night for a young 27-year-old kid who didn't know anything.
Did you think at that time, hey, this will just be one of 500 someday, or are you just thinking, I got to get a win?
I was an interim coach at the time, and I was fighting for my life.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't even imagine 50 or five. I could picture five, but not 50. You know, I was just praying that I did a good enough job that year that they would want me back as their permanent coach.
You guys get Liberty for win number 500, and it didn't start well. I mean, you guys missed 12 of the first 14 shots in the game. When a team's playing that way, what are you thinking? What advice are you giving? What are you saying during a timeout when you can't find a bucket?
Man, it was a crazy start, and it made sense. There weren't many people in the gym. Miami was a ranked team. Liberty is not. It was 2 p.m., which is 11 a.m. this time, and it's the back-to-back games on back-to-back days, three time zones east, which I've learned over my career is a difficult thing. And so all those things are factored in my head. It certainly wasn't the way I wanted the game to start, but it didn't surprise me. And because of that, I just had to reason, you know, and just stay calm and let's just problem solve this. Liberty is playing a ranked team. They're excited. They were coming off a win against Miami of Ohio the day before, so they were feeling good, and they're deceptively good. They were off to kind of a rough start this year, but they had pieces that could hurt you, and so it was just, let's just stick with it. But there was a timeout in the second quarter. We were down 9 or 10, it seemed, and I said, if we don't, you know, pick it up, this is going to be 20 at half, and, you know, it was just one of those games where we were flat coming out, and it's healthy for a team to know that if you don't prepare correctly and you don't play with that edge every moment, anybody can get you. And so it was good for us. You know, a team developing its leadership still, of course, and coming together with some young players.
I like that you look for like the teaching moment in that. And I think that that's reflective of kind of why you've been successful. When you have an environment like that, could you see that coming in warmups? Are you telling them to defend against it, or is it just something you notice as the game starts?
Well, I'm not typically up there to observe or out there to observe warmups. I can feel the energy in the shoot around. I can feel it in the locker room before when we're addressing the team. This team is fairly stoic overall. We've obviously had some big moments already this year, and we approach each situation fairly calmly overall, and just hopefully appropriately with a cognitivist perspective along with the emotion that goes with it. And so it didn't feel off to me really, but the way the game started, I could tell we were really pressing. We were not comfortable, and I think that was because they didn't feel like they were prepared. I could see that right off the bat in the game. So you're just praying that somebody hits a shot to loosen everybody up and let's go, and it took a while.
Scott Ruick with us, Oregon State women's basketball coach. The story comes out subsequently. It was a big weekend in women's college basketball, a bunch of upsets. Oregon loses, Baylor loses, and I'm kind of looking around, and then I see the story. If the tournament started today, Oregon State would be the number one overall seed. Can you even afford to hear that? Do you want your players to hear that? Or is it – how do you address that?
I did, actually. As soon as we got together, we practiced Monday this week, just the way things worked out. So we practiced the next day after we got home Sunday afternoon, and normally that's an off day, but we practiced this week. And so the first thing I started with was this sign that I found that Bill Belichick has up in the Patriots offices or facility that just said, quiet the noise, and don't feed the hype. And it's so you pick opportunities like that because there's so much noise this year, as there should be in this state, in the Pac-12 for our sport. And there's a lot of noise that you can get caught up in, and with social media and, our students on social media as much as they are, which is impossible really not to be anymore, that it is a factor. So we talked about what does this matter? And what was really interesting with the whole thing was that article came out on Sunday, and we felt like we lost on Saturday. I mean, yeah, we beat Liberty, but it felt like we couldn't have played worse in that game. Credit them, but we also didn't have an edge. And it was such a struggle. It's like nobody believed it. At the same time, we know what we're capable of, And so we've had some moments where, we can see ourselves as a team that's absolutely capable of doing amazing things. And that is an opportunity for this group this year. But it came at a really interesting time where I could use it in a way that really painted it as just hype, because it didn't feel right.
Yeah. And
it's logically a perspective that's valid.
I also think, though, it could be that kind of tournament this year in the women's bracket where you've got, the number one overall seed could fall, number two could fall. They could fall on the same day. I mean, it feels like the top of the rankings are tighter than they've ever been. Am I just recently tuning into that, or are there a larger group of more competitive teams?
I think it's a combo. I think it's a combo of both. I mean, a lot of people have put Oregon up there as untouchable. Louisville proved that's not the case, but we've got a long ways to go, and Oregon's a great team. Baylor has some pieces coming back, and Lauren Cox, they're missing someone, so they're not what they're going to be at the end of the year. We're starting two true freshmen. We're not anywhere near what we're going to be at the end of the year. Stanford is dependent on some youth as well. They're not where they're going to be. And you just go down the list. We haven't even mentioned Connecticut, right? And so, there's a lot of great teams. There's a lot of intrigue. It feels like there's as much attention as ever on our sport. And a lot of the fun of that is there is a question mark now. It's not just predetermined like it was for about 11 years.
One of the things that you do during games, and I don't care how competitive or what the stakes are, you always look very calm. Are you calm inside, or is that just what you're exuding so that your team picks up on that calm feeling?
My belief as a coach is you need to be what the team needs you to be. And I'm not necessarily a calm person all the time. I'm emotional. I've got a lot of Italian in me. Excuse me. And so I've learned over the years, I don't think there's a coach in our conference that has more technicals than me. And over the years, and it might be height discrimination. I think we need to study this. I'm just teasing, but kind of. But It's there's a lot of emotion on the inside, and I put a lot into what I do, and I care a lot, maybe too much sometimes. And so what I've learned, though, is when I played, I wanted to look over and see strength. I wanted to look over and see confidence. Hey, everything's going to be okay. And I know for me, if I get too emotional, I don't think as well as I do when I manage my emotions and take that emotion out, actually, and just look at the situation strategically. And so my halftime talk the other day, I mean, I could have gone crazy, yeah. You know, at halftime against Liberty. You know, we're behind, I think, 5 points at the time, played as bad as we could have played. And, you know, get ready and all these things I could have said. And I didn't. I just said, okay, here we are, and let's look at this challenge. This is a challenge. It's really it's fun. I mean, of course we're getting challenged by these guys, you know, and we're a half step slow, and they're beating us to the ball and out hustling us. And, well, that same thought process I try to maintain throughout, no matter the situation or the day.
You'll host Hawaii tomorrow, 7 o'clock. Give an appeal for people who aren't doing something tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Want to see great women's basketball?
Well, we have a group of guards on this team, and two of them are seniors. And if you're going to regret not seeing Mikayla Pivic and Kat Tudor play this game, you know, let alone Destiny and Aaliyah. And so we've got freshmen that are two of the highest rated players we've ever had come and just watching their growth. And now we've got a Hawaii team coming in to challenge us, another challenger that wants to knock off a ranked team. And they just beat Texas at home. And Texas has 3 USA kids on their roster. And so this team, they had 2 players, one go 7 for 8 from 3, one go 3 for 4 from 3 against Texas, and played an inspired game and finished the deal against them and beat them by 13. And so this is a dangerous, well-coached team. It's going to be a heck of a game. And so they reminded me a lot of Liberty, that their scheme is excellent, their system's excellent, and you have to beat them. They will not beat themselves. So it's going to be a great battle for us.
Scott Ruick, chasing number 501. Thank you. Congratulations. Thanks for making time for us.
Always a pleasure, John. Thank you.
Coming up, Trace Tinkle. Plus, I'll talk more about college football attendance in the Pac-12 title game. The Pac-12 Conference will kick off the Pac-12 Championship game Friday, 5 o'clock, Santa Clara, right there in Levi's Stadium, which, by the way, for the WWE's WrestleMania 31 drew more than 76,000 fans in 2015. There will not be 76,000 fans at Levi's Stadium on Friday, however, because a Pac-12 conference championship game will be being played between Utah and Oregon. And it's not the fault, in my opinion, of the Utah or Oregon fan base. You have a game that is scheduled on a Friday, a game that is scheduled for 5 p.m., a game that is scheduled for Friday at 5 p.m. in an area where rush hour traffic is an absolute nightmare. I know. I grew up there. It's asking too much, even of people who live in the area. So what is the Pac-12 championship game really about? Because the stadium will be about half full. The weather is expected to be rainy. Also, winds as high as 19 miles an hour. So it's not going to be ideal for football. But can't control that. But what you can control is what this game is about. And for me, it's evident that this game and a lot of other college football games are all about television. We know that, right? You know that in the college football bowl season, where you see the bowl season come and ABC and ESPN taking control of the bowl season. There will be 40 bowl games. ESPN and ABC will broadcast 35 of them. They own 14 of those bowl games. So ESPN Events owns those. So the idea that these are sporting events is passé. They are really commodities, and they are traded upon by the television entities who sell advertising into them and really don't think about the fan who's in the stadium. And I think that's a big part of the problem, and it's what I wrote about today on Oregon Live. And if you haven't read it yet, give it 5 minutes of your time. It is titled College Football's Troubles Will Be Punctuated with More Empty Seats in the Pac-12 Title Game. I've got a photograph on there of the USC-Oregon game, which was about 20%, 25% full at kickoff. And I also have another photo of the Stanford-Oregon game, which was maybe 30% full at kickoff. And certainly, I think, while the attendance will probably be reported at around 40,000 for Friday night's game, it'll probably be about 20 to 25,000 people in that stadium. And it's a shame. But it's not unlike so many other college football games this season, right? You know, we've seen this. This is a trend. And it's not just the Pac-12 conference. The Big Ten conference posted its lowest average attendance in 25 years last season. And it will break that low again this season. The Pac-12 had the biggest attendance decline in all of Power 5 college football last year. They drew 250,000 fewer fans to the stadium than they did just 1 year earlier. Even the SEC was down 100,000 in total attendance in that same period. Now, you've heard me interview athletic directors like Utah's Mark Harlan and Washington State's Pat Chun, and Oregon's Rob Mullins, and Oregon State's Scott Barnes, of course, on this radio show. You've heard me interview Larry Scott, the Pac-12 commissioner. You've heard the SEC commissioner, Greg Sankey, on this show. The biggest issue facing college athletics is not player safety. It's not whether or not players should be paid. The biggest issue is that the teams are looking around their stadiums on game days, and they're realizing that you're not showing up. And I think there are a variety of reasons why fans don't go to games. And we've talked about it on today's show, but I think there are a variety of reasons. And I think for Pac-12 fans, the late kickoffs are a huge part of that equation. Rising ticket prices are in there. Of course, your family demands are in there. Of course, there's the saturation of available entertainment. That's in there. And your living room television set is in there as well. But also, as a consumer, you have changed, or we have changed, I should say, because you have a younger segment of fans, the Alabama Adrianas of the world, who are not shilling out a bunch of money to be inside the stadium. And in fact, when we talked to Adriana about being at an Iron Bowl or whatever, she talks about the tailgate. She talks about the game day experience. She talks about being in the parking lot. She doesn't talk about being in the stadium and the game itself, although the game is important. And it goes to what USC professor David Carter told me for the project. He is a sports business and strategic marketing guy, okay? He says media dollars were once the tail that wags the dog. Now the media dollars are the dog. And he talked about the games during the regular season as commodities. And it's why you saw ESPN and Fox pay the Pac-12 $3 billion for the broadcast rights to all these regular season games. That was, you know, in 2011, that was a big deal. But part of that deal was that the Pac-12 had to give ESPN and Fox control of kickoff times. And that's why you and I don't know sometimes on a Sunday, 6 days before we're going to have to go to the stadium, we don't know what time the game's kicking off. I think that's a big problem. And I think it has turned you off. It's turned me off. I think it's a big part of the attrition in the Pac-12. I think it explains a chunk of why the Pac-12 lag so far behind the others in Power 5 football. So what are they doing to fix this? Well, Mark Harlan, the Utah AD, came on this show and said, hey, this is something that has to be addressed at the next round of negotiations for media rights. And that comes in 2024, by the way. So it ain't happening anytime soon. But what the conferences are trying to do, the Pac-12, of course, is trying to push back the best it can, but it has signed a contract. It can't get out of that. Larry Scott has called it, you know, hey, that was a trade-off that we made. It's not a trade-off. It's a massive inconvenience, and it was a misfire by the conference, not realizing how badly that would hurt the fan who's coming to the stadium, how the fan would not feel valued, how the fan couldn't make plans, especially your die-hard core Oregon and Oregon State fans who want to come to the games and want to plan around that Saturday, who just can't do it because you won't give a kickoff time. And then if, when you do, you stick it on the Pac-12 network at 7:30, and Utah's played three games this year that kicked off after 8 o'clock. How are Oregon and Utah playing on the Pac-12 network, which, by the way, only reaches 17.9 million households? That's a third of the SEC network. That's a third of the Big Ten network. ESPN, by comparison, $86 million homes. So how do you expect to get Utah and Oregon to be top of mind for the College Football Playoff Selection Committee when they are buried at 7:30, playing in front of a half-empty stadium. It is a big problem. And I got to tell you, Oregon draws better than most in the Pac-12. So does Washington State until this year. But still, you look around the conference, the trend is alarming. And it explains why Oregon is signing on to play Ohio State in a home-and-home and why it's going to play Auburn in the preseason. Because I looked at it, and maybe you looked at it too, and said, hey, should they be in this game? Is this a smart thing for Oregon to do? What are they doing? The bottom line is, Rob Mullins is trying to keep it fresh. He's trying to give you matchups that keep you engaged. And I think that's interesting. And I think it's smart. Alabama's doing the same thing. You know how we criticize Alabama for their non-conference schedule? Alabama has signed on to play non-conference games against USC, Florida State, Wisconsin, and Texas in the coming years. Alabama's done that not because it wants to make the playoff, but because it wants to make the playoff, strengthen its schedule some, but it knows it needs to get out front and give its fan base a major event to attend and show up to and tweet about and be at, a can't-miss event. And Alabama's doing that because it knows it needs to sell tickets. And when the SEC's got a problem selling tickets, everybody's got a problem selling tickets. And that's the bottom line. So you have a Pac-12 conference that is lagging further behind the others when it comes to attendance. And I think there are a variety of reasons why. You can tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. Tell me why you haven't gone to the stadium this season or why you've decided not to have season tickets. But the bottom line is, I suspect it has to do with kickoff times and the price of things and that television in your living room, which is big-time competition for the games that are going on. So, yeah, the Pac-12 championship.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.